Hello, grandkids, and welcome to another edition of the Stunt Granny Audio. This one happening to be 484. Why was that such a mouthful? I don't know. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is happening, good sir?
So much is happening. It's just been a crazy last 24 hours plus in the world of wrestling, so I think we should just get right to it.
No, it is.
No one listening really cares about how our actual personal lives are going right now, so I think we just go for it.
Well, the funny thing is that I was ready. I already titled the show Becky Lynch this morning. I like to get the post out of the way in the morning, get the picture put in, get the graphic done. And I already had Becky Lynch as the number one story. And somehow from that point of doing that, she became an even bigger story in the process. Which I maybe thought unfathomable. Just because she is the hottest thing in wrestling. Period. End of sentence. I would have to say. You know, there isn't anyone that isn't loving badass Becky Lynch. And she really topped herself by attacking Ronda Rousey. And they cut to her in the disarm her at the back in Raw. And I mean, it was just like, oh my God. Like, again, like she'd kind of had a lot of badassery coming in. That one, I don't know where you go from that one. But to have that, like, Survivor Series was not something that I was particularly concerned about. What she ended up doing really just is like, I'll just watch just for this match. You know, just... So the attack itself, I'm like, oh, man, that's badass. And then she goes out and walks out to the Raw women's team plus a few extra ladies out there. And just the swagger that she has right now is, you know, I don't know that there's anyone that's kind of had it this much since. And someone who we'll definitely get around to talking about later, Daniel Bryan, when he had his WrestleMania moment. You know, like, she's kind of on that kind of run at the current moment, where the crowd is just going bonkers for anything that she does.
Yeah, it is. It's part Daniel Bryan. It's part Stone Cold Steve Austin with some, I believe when I was listening to Lilith a little bit this morning, Wade Keller with our good friend Cameron Hawkins on the Wade Keller post show, he brought up some Conor McGregor swagger, which is, you know, which Irish brethren, I can see that. I can definitely see that a lot. I see that a lot. Yeah. In the way she walks, the way she carries herself, the way she talks, it is very McGregor like, more than Stone Cold like. Oh. And the Daniel Bryan part of the story is she is the fan's choice, not the company's choice.
Oh, but yeah.
Even after the events that we're going to get into, I think it's pretty obvious tonight they're in the Becky Lynch business. It may have taken what happened last night, the whole story of it, to make them realize what they have here.
Yeah, well, and then that's ended up, okay, so I create the post, and then Jeremy sends me the news that Becky Lynch is out for Survivor Series, and I read the link, and you also ended up sending it to me. Was it from Wrestle Inc?
Mine was from The Observer.
Oh.
That was the real news when Meltzer confirmed it, yeah.
Okay. Well, but even that was misleading because it said a concussion and possibly a broken nose. I'm just going to say with my own eyes tonight, that was probably more than, well, and kind of confirmed with the report, at least what they said on TV. She had some facial fractures, and honestly, seeing that first clip that you sent me of Nia Jax laying in that shot, I thought, oh, I could see how she was, like, maybe going for a forearm and Lynch was further away than she thought. And then the WWE showed it from another angle, and I'm like, oh, that was not good. That was not good at all.
You're right. No, I don't know what Nia Jax is thinking. I kind of looked at it a bunch of times. Was she going for a punch? Was she going for a forearm? Because here's the thing. I don't believe Nia Jax doesn't really punch a lot. Because she's so much bigger than all of her opponents. Oh. She usually does the big man, you know, clubbing forearms from above type of situation.
Right. Agreed.
So, that was a rookie mistake. I'm not as angry about all of this as I was this afternoon, but that was all her fault. That there was nothing about that that was anyone else's fault but Nia Jax's.
Right.
I mean, at this point in her career, she doesn't know how to throw a punch. Something's very wrong.
Yeah, I mean. Like you said, maybe it's just because she doesn't do it much, there is an unfamiliarity with it, but even then, you know, the business is keeping everyone as safe as you can, you know. There's obviously going to be errors even from the best of them. Daniel Bryan, I guess, quite recently came to the defense of his wife. In her wrestling when it came under scrutiny. And, you know, those mistakes, I guess I could understand a little bit more than this one. Like you said, like, I'm not quite sure what was going on. Like, because when you see the other replay, and then I also saw, like, a fan cam of it. And, I mean, Becky was just way too far away to be swinging. You know?
Yeah.
It just seemed really awkward for her not to just be taking offense, I guess. Because I thought that she was double-teamed on top of that. So I want to say that Lynch was kind of getting some help from someone to the left. And I'd have to look at the replay to see who it was, but I guess I'm not surprised. Like from the way SmackDown played tonight, it would seem that Becky Lynch is fairly lucid, which is a good thing.
She was very lucid. I mean, thankfully, not having any ill effects. I mean, obviously, that the swelling, and I hope she doesn't have to have any. Well, I don't know. You think she's gonna need the plastic surgery?
It's probably gonna be one of those things where you need the swelling to go down before you can figure out what exactly needs done. But obviously, that was a good black and blue already, what she was sporting tonight. So I wouldn't be surprised. And then, you know, the other part of those kind of injuries, at least, when it's more broken bone, there isn't a whole lot you can do. Like, there isn't a oh, I can rehab this and get back quicker. Like, that shit just needs to heal.
Yeah.
So that you can do your job again. Like, the timetable's the timetable, you know? And plus, whatever kind of... Even if she could talk and do the promo, I'm sure that they probably would want her to stay out of the ring anyway for at least some time period.
Yeah. They didn't take the title from her.
Oh.
So I don't think that they fear that this is going to be, she's going to be out for too long of a time.
Yeah.
It did look bad. She could be out 4 to 6 weeks. I could certainly see that.
Yeah. I would not be surprised if it's in that range.
Yeah.
At all.
I definitely see it being that. I mean, especially since they're closing off the year with freaking TLC, which is not, you know, the last paper of the year is always, you know, nothing special, so.
And again, if you're honestly trying to somewhat protect your wrestlers, and you put someone with a recently broken face into some type of a gimmick match in which there's a lot of variables, I would call into question your your booking just in general, to be honest with you.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. So, yeah, I don't expect to see Becky Lynch back possibly till the end of the year or early 2019 at the earliest. No, it's unfortunate. It always is unfortunate in these situations. I'm sure Nia Jax feels terrible, but there's a pattern has been developing here of her being careless, being negligent out there. I believe one of Alexa Bliss's concussions couldn't be laid at her feet. What happened with Zelina Vega having to miss the European tour was because of concerns after she took that gorilla press to the floor. Trying to think of anything else.
Okay. Well, I guess I did not... I saw some other people noting that this has been a something of a pattern, and I guess I wasn't too familiar with the specific times, but I guess Alexa Bliss is a good example though too. Like, she's been out for promos at this point, but she hasn't been doing any in-ring work. You know, so there's still something that's not quite right from the concussion. So, I mean, Becky Lynch being out there and being able to do that is, you know, good news, but it's also not definite news that, oh, yeah, if it weren't for a broken face, she'd be back in there either. So, I mean, thankfully, there's more awareness to the problems that can be caused by these things, especially in the long term. And it's best for them to use caution. So, like, I was really bummed about it at the beginning of the day I was surprised that they were already calling Becky Lynch out for Survivor Series with the fact that it was possibly a broken nose. But kind of after seeing everything... you know, the additional footage that you didn't see last night on Raw, and just the aftermath on Becky's face, like, it was very easy to go, yeah, you needed to cancel this match, you know, like, she had to be out of there. And that was the other crazy thing, is that move that really... that took Becky Lynch out of the match, it also was like one of the reasons that segment was really bonkers, because Becky Lynch was bleeding. And I mean, it really added a rawness. And I mean, that's something that kind of, I guess, gets lost in it. Like, the segment itself, You know, like, everyone was playing that up. Like, even Becky put the Irish war paint picture up on Instagram with her face bloody. And, like, almost everyone had a picture of that up there. Like, that kind of... That's the other strange thing about this whole incident, is that something that shouldn't have happened also happened to make this segment far more iconic than it would have otherwise.
Like, oh, absolutely. That was her Stone Cold at WrestleMania 13 moment. I mean, that's what that was. I mean, that, so much blood, and they made the, they, you know, for as squeamish as they've been, they made the directorial decision to close up, put, have many, many close-ups of her face. They, because, you know, there was a judgment call made that, you know, we're going to focus on this. This is, as you said, that there's a rawness and a realness here that we can't pass up. I mean, she looked like a badass. She looked like a warrior. She looked like a warrior, you know, Irish warrior queen, or whatever, however you want to put it. It is an iconic moment, and I doesn't feel like they're it sucks that they can't immediately capitalize on it. But in the end, maybe the blessing in disguise is, you don't have to do the Becky versus Ronda match on Sunday and have a clear finish that would more than likely be, you know, Ronda getting the tap out win.
Yeah, I assumed two things. I assumed either a Ronda win or some type of either a double disqualification or a double count out. Something of that nature. I did not see Ronda Rousey losing at that time. You know, if she meets her further down the line, I could see a Becky Lynch win. Whether it ends up happening or not is a whole different subject.
Well, how tonight went, think that it's happening. I mean, Becky made it very clear that, you know, she's being held out by doctors. She wanted to go out there and kick Ronda's ass anyway. She said, we're not getting this match yet. And they're going with Charlotte. The long-rumored, probably dating back to last WrestleMania, that this coming WrestleMania was going to be Charlotte versus Ronda. And that match is on Sunday now. 5 days.
Yeah, well, and that was, I guess that's a whole different thing to get into, because I saw a lot of people, including one Sean Waltman, not too happy about the hug between Charlotte and Becky Lynch. Honestly, you don't know how long Lynch is going to be out, and they're needed. I mean, I guess you could have done without the hug and just had her pick her. Because honestly, like, aside from Charlotte, Asuka's the only other pick, right? Like, as much as I like Naomi.
Well, yeah. Keep going, guy. If you keep going, there's
okay. Well, as much as
potential picks that are left.
Yeah, like, to me, Naomi is a pick just because I think she's has enough of a following that she could take her on. I'm not sure that they would maybe feel. I'm not sure that they still have all the faith in the world in Naomi in ring wise, or maybe it's just because she's had to take a back seat because of everyone else on it, but well, because of Charlotte and Becky Lynch at this point. Yeah, Asuka at least has kind of the badass credentials, even though she has, you know, they haven't really played up her just having one loss. But, You know, there are certainly some things to be gleaned, too, from the Becky Lynch and Charlotte hug, which is thinking that there could be a future Four Horsewomen versus Four Horsewomen more in the recent future than any of us suspected, too.
That is a big part. Because you effectively ended the Charlotte Lynch, Becky Lynch feud. Made it completely, perfectly okay after all this, the rigmarole, that yes, Becky Lynch is a babyface. When she comes back, she is a babyface. She is a, you know, and yeah, as long as Charlotte, Becky, Sasha, and Bayley are all babyfaces, you can absolutely do that match.
So I mean, it's kind of crazy, like, everything that's come out of this angle.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I wouldn't be surprised if Shayna and Marina and Jessamyn are at Survivor Series.
That would certainly start a long and drawn-out process that could work our way towards to WrestleMania, where... I mean, would you do a 4-on-4 at WrestleMania?
I still don't know. Jessamyn Duke and Marina Shafer are still so early in their in their careers. I would do Becky versus Rousey. Definitely. And maybe do a 6 woman with the rest or something. I still wouldn't put Jessamyn Duke and Marina Shafer in that high profile of a position.
Right.
You could do the 4-on-4 at any point, you know, between Rumble and WrestleMania. Really? And the women's title should be at stake, and you know, it should be a big 1-on-1 match.
Oh, right. So I mean, I guess that is the other thing. Like, it'll be like you said. Like, this next month, there isn't a whole lot to plan for. But you know, it'll be pretty interesting to see, you know, what the exact time frame is for Becky and, if they can work towards this or if they continue to work towards this, this could just be one of those things where Charlotte, again, like, she's one of the few logical picks.
Yeah. She was definitely the logical pick. Yeah. To do this, other than Asuka, I mean, you do the handshake and then the hug. I think it soothes the whatever damage has been done to Charlotte since the whole Becky feud started, and you know she was getting booed. You give her the complete Becky seal of approval, which is interesting. It is interesting though that they don't want Charlotte going into Survivor into Sunday with any kind of a heelish tint to her at all. Ronda Rousey, on the other hand, let's talk about that promo.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know whose idea that, if the idea was to keep Rousey a babyface, that was not a good idea, especially going into a match with Becky Lynch. Charlotte, it's you know, it's a little more chance for Ronda to be cheered, especially since she's lived in Southern California her entire life. But man, that, you know, that anti-millennial man promo, what were they even thinking with that? I mean, why would a babyface insult a possibly large percentage of the
of
their audience, particularly the paying audience, because yes, the TV audience skews older, but the old people ain't the ones going to all the shows. It's still the 30 somethings going to the shows, whether they're going by themselves or bringing families and the kids, whatever. But it's not, you know, once again, it's, you know, Raw has become that kind of program. Yes, that, you know, people 45 and up will watch on TV like they watch NCIS or anything like that. But you know, they're not they're still not making, you know, a large percentage of the live, of the live audience, though. Particularly at a pay-per-view.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I guess whatever works, you know. It's one of those things where she certainly has an unlikability factor when she turns it on.
She really does. I mean, she really, yeah. She can be a great heel someday. Absolutely. And maybe that day is sooner than we think. And
I guess that's the only other thing. Because, I mean, I believe, I don't know if it's you and I or maybe it's someone else, but I feel like we've talked about how to square, you know, Shayna Baszler, who just, you know, she exudes heel in all facets. And so how do you square her with babyface Ronda Rousey? And having her go, you know, that might be one of those blessing in disguises too, where Becky Lynch was so hot and you decided, you know, a couple of years running now, they've had the champion versus champion matches here. So it's kind of one of those destined things by kind of their own standards. And it was a good time to turn Ronda heel, I guess. And again, it's something that needs followed up on more than just one kind of weird promo that...
Yeah, it absolutely does. And maybe... You know, there will be no follow-up, no immediate follow-up on it, and we'll just get, you know, get through Sunday. Maybe it was a misstep. It was something that, maybe it was something Ronda came up with herself, that maybe it was a Vince thing or someone on the writing team. I don't feel like it was a Paul Heyman thing. I think Heyman would know better than, once again, the how she came off there. Vince would know better, but if he's got to bug up his ass about something and he needs someone to go on a surrogate rant for him, that's just what he's going to do because he's old and he's rich and he doesn't give a shit anymore.
Well, I would argue that he never gave a shit and that always seemed to happen at some juncture.
There's no way Vince McMahon knows what avocado toast is. Not a chance at all. He'd never heard the word burrito before, apparently in the mid-2000s. According, I don't know if it was Bruce Prichard or somebody. Because every day he eats steak wraps, which are basically a burrito.
Right.
And someone used the word burrito around him, and he didn't know what it was. No, that's a steak wrap.
Oh my god, there are a lot of times where I'm good with not having the extra information. Because the unlikability factor of Ronda Rousey reminded me of something that site friend Cameron Hawkins posted today that I had forgotten about, that Ronda Rousey was a Sandy Hook truther.
Yes, she was, and she's a doomsday prepper, and yeah, she's had some colorful issues. I believe, you know, someone got a hold of her and told her not to do that shit. That was back when she was in the UFC. Let alone WWE, who's even probably more controlling of those types of things. But yeah, once again, yeah, Ronda does have, you know, but if the goal is to keep Ronda a babyface, the company needs to protect her from herself, then. If that was her verbiage, if that was her idea, up to the company. Decades and decades of following the man have led us to believe that Hulk Hogan's pretty much a fucking asshole.
Oh.
But 30 years ago, no one knew, or I should say, Terry Bollea is a fucking asshole.
Right.
But 30 years ago, they protected Hulk Hogan. They protected the character from the man. And that's what you need to do. You know, don't let people peel away the onion. You know, if you still want, you know,
yeah, if that's
the
your
character
goal.
Of Ronda Rousey that have this pristine image. And the other part of it is, once again, you know, Ronda can go on these rants, but she's the one who goes and basically cries in her room for a year when things don't go her right.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that it's in some ways so used, it's overused, and it kind of loses a little bit of value. But then it's also always true. You know, there is a truth to it, even if it is maybe used too frequently.
Right. It
you know, because
she hit every anti-millennial talking point. It probably is how she really feels, even though her and Becky Lynch are the same age, and they were both born after 1981.
Yeah, so they're in the category itself.
Yeah.
So it was
a weird promo. Maybe it's the setup for a Rousey heel turn, or maybe it was just a misstep. Maybe they don't see it as a misstep because there's people, you know, kind of out of touch people in the company who don't understand how, you know, you don't want to heal yourself to a percentage of your audience, and that. Where was I going? I was going somewhere with this.
Well, yeah, and I was waiting for you to keep going.
Yeah.
Well, no, there's just a lot of ways to go, and it'll be interesting to see where it ends up going.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways all of this can go. You know, Rousey versus Charlotte Flair is the match on Sunday. A lot of people thought they were getting it at WrestleMania. Get it at Survivor Series, still be a hell of a deal, and, you know, the finish of the match should give us a real clue, you know, where the WWE's women's evolution is headed next.
Yeah, so I guess to move on from that, since that took up what would normally be about half of a show, yeah, I knew that this was going to be an easy show to do because that topic was very rich with information. But I guess another one that is very interesting was the beginning of SmackDown. You know, whether you kind of agreed with what ended up happening or not is, in my opinion, immaterial. Because there is definitely a seismic change happening. I thought it was strange when, Paul Heyman shows up on SmackDown. And this is during a AJ Styles promo. And he straight up says that Daniel Bryan is the best wrestler in the company?
He actually said he's the best ring performer of all time.
Of all time.
Yeah. That which was a little far. It was a little far to go. I think in the company currently was just fine to go, but just, you know,
yeah,
if the two best wrestlers of all time are in the ring right now, I think business would be doing better.
They are I have enjoyed them quite a bit personally.
I've enjoyed it too. I'm not saying I'm not enjoying anything. It was definitely a strange show. Makes you wonder if Daniel Bryan always supposed to go into Survivor Series as the WWE champion. Was he supposed to win at Crown Jewel? And then, you know, Bryan's stand on not going to Saudi Arabia changed a lot of things. They couldn't do the title change because they promised the Saudi royal family that they were going to get a WWE championship. They were going to get those two big championship matches. So they had to send Styles and Samoa Joe to fulfill that commitment. And then,
right. Yeah, I guess I had kind of forgotten about that part of the proceedings. But honestly, that's one of those things, too. Well, I guess you can't go right back to having that match. And you needed some type of connective tissue, I guess, is what they were thinking. And the confrontation tonight was that connective tissue.
Yeah, I don't know. It kind of felt like something that was thrown together, though. It didn't feel like Heyman was as on as he usually is. AJ Styles stammered over his words like he's me on Stunt Granny. It really didn't feel smooth. Even the match itself, at least in the beginning, didn't feel as smooth as an AJ Styles Daniel Bryan match typically is. So once again, I wonder, was it the plan all along? Is it something that after Becky Lynch went down, Vince just blew a gasket and decided he was not just gonna blow up the women's championship situation, but the men's as well.
I mean, people, as they could have and should have, made the inevitable jokes of someone realizing that it was going to be AJ Styles versus Brock Lesnar for the second straight year at Survivor Series, and they had to change it up.
I mean, my thought is, someone finally clued Brock in that AJ Styles is that little guy he beat last year, so he needs a new little guy to beat this year.
Yeah, which is the other thing that's kind of crazy about the situation is that, no matter who was in this position against Brock, I guess I'm not expecting Brock to lose. Like, if you gave him the championship back, like, Daniel Bryan's not going to... Like, I could see a time and a place where Daniel Bryan beats Brock Lesnar. Just, you know, from a booking standpoint, not from a physicality standpoint, for sure. But right now, with this, you know, shortened run-up to this match, like, I really don't see that happening.
No, I don't really see it either. I saw it more with AJ Styles because... That would involve him losing 2 years in a row to Brock Lesnar. But now that Daniel Bryan's in, it's a fresh match, and I guess I didn't think it happened, but no, I don't foresee a Lesnar loss here, which brings about the, we'll finish up with general Survivor Series thoughts. Let's keep going with this, because there's another wrinkle to this whole Daniel Bryan, AJ Styles, Brock Lesnar deal. Daniel Bryan didn't just win the WWE Championship clean in the middle. He kicked AJ Styles in the balls while the referee was down. And then, after the match, kicked the holy hell out of AJ Styles, seemingly turning heel.
I guess that is the other reason why this is topic number two, as belated as it is in the show. I'm interested. It's one of those things to me where he had lost some momentum as that guy. Like, when he came... It's kind of weird that when he came back from injury, he started to lose the fans. And maybe a change was needed to freshen him up. So, because this was another one where I feel like on the Twitters, I saw a lot of people not excited about this turn of events. I am completely cool with this turn of events. Heel Daniel Bryan, when he's been in the WWE, has been a lot of fun. And it's been a while since he's done that. And also, every heel in this company ends up getting cheered at some juncture. So this will just kind of reinvent his babyface-ness. And I think that's a good thing. It was shocking And it does kind of throw an interesting wrinkle, or the possibility that he gets caught by the referee doing something of that nature on Sunday.
Yeah, it does. It is an interesting wrinkle because, really, if you think about it, babyface Daniel Bryan against Brock Lesnar really is essentially the same style of match that AJ Styles and Brock Lesnar would have had.
Oh,
I mean, they're not totally the same wrestler, of course, but it would have been the same big man versus little man, you know, concept, David versus Goliath concept. But Bryan is a heel, and Brock is a heel, essentially. That's an interesting mix. Like, what, you know, now that Daniel Bryan has thrown aside his code of honor, or whatever you want to call it, what will he do to beat Brock Lesnar?
Yeah. And again, I guess it's kind of interesting that he does this, and he really has a short run-up to answer, well, not even to answer these questions. Like, you know, he has no time, really, except for on social media to answer these questions.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Daniel Bryan has been talking about having a match with Brock Lesnar for about 5 years. This is Daniel Bryan's dream match, you know, and it was a weird road to get there. But he's finally getting it. He is getting his dream match. And personal level, I couldn't be happier for him. It's a match, you know, I'm sure they'll have a hell of a match. Most likely Brock will win the and then next week we go back on to Daniel Bryan's explanation, and back to a Daniel Bryan AJ Styles feud heading into TLC for that championship rematch.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like a pretty standard run of events. And, yeah, I guess it'll be a fun match to watch. I mean, it always seems like when Paul Heyman is awkward as that promo was, but when he comes out and praises some wrestler, it does seem like, Brock's ready to take them on. You know, he does not seem to sandbag that match. And just him coming out and complimenting Daniel Bryan the way he did, you know, I guess I have some faith in this being a good match.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely have faith in it being a good match. I think Brock's going to come in and be motivated. Paul built up Daniel Bryan very, very strongly. Which is why I still don't understand why people thought that Daniel Bryan wasn't going to win that match in the end. I mean, you know, again, Paul Heyman wouldn't do that. If a match between Daniel Bryan and Brock Lesnar is really never going to happen, wasn't going to happen soon, he wouldn't have said it. Now, granted, there was that one time last year where he put over Finn Balor huge, and then plans changed. But this is 5 days before a big show. The match wouldn't even happen if they weren't going to change the title. They weren't going to, you know, there would be no point in Bryan losing again. And being off. Well, that's the other interesting part, I guess. AJ Styles is off of Survivor Series.
Unless they put him in.
I don't think they are. The team's full. They had a Jeff Hardy tonight. Rey Mysterio re-earned his spot.
Oh, I thought that I thought that they were still one spot short because Daniel Bryan left.
No, Jeff Hardy took that spot.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I thought that they had two spots coming into tonight free, and that Daniel Bryan opened up another one. And so I could be wrong with that. So I thought that maybe Styles would have that spot. If not, Yeah, that kind of sucks that he goes from another Brock Lesnar match to off the card. But I mean, he'll pop back in there at the next pay-per-view.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Styles has missed a pay-per-view since he's been in WWE, so that's interesting. But it's not. I don't think it's a big deal. I don't think. Well, between the main event of SmackDown and then again on Mixed Match Challenge, I mean, he was in two matches tonight, so I'm pretty sure he's not hurt.
Oh. Yeah, I would figure that things physically are okay. And that was something that we didn't get into much, but yeah, that was not the best Bryan Styles match. It kind of lacked a little bit of something altogether for how good they've been previously. But, you know, the aftermath really, well, the end of the match / aftermath definitely was more of the interesting part than the match itself. So I guess that there is some other stuff to get around to. Not too shockingly, those two topics tended to chew up the show. I guess one thing that I can't believe how much better SmackDown's tag team division is compared to Raw's. Like, watching those two things get set up. Early this morning, I saw some comments about New Day and the Usos didn't need any tag team partners because they were already more important than the Raw team. And then you add, Gallows and Anderson, they may not have had much in the WWE during their run here, but they certainly still have some recognition because of their accomplishments overseas. I'll still take... I'm trying to think if Sanity and the Clones really aren't much better than some of the Raw teams, but still, SmackDown has three good teams and Raw has a whole lot of nothing.
Yeah, well, Raw, it's so bad. I mean, oh man, that Geek Battle Royal was just awful. It was 3 minutes long. That's even after the fake out the first time where the entire tag team division was destroyed by Braun Strowman. Kind of like DX decimated the tag team division, over a decade ago.
Oh. Yeah.
But who really cares? I mean, the Raw Tag Team Division is so bad right now. They definitely need to get some new life in there, some new teams. If they even care to at this point.
Yeah, it's one of the... I guess it's been kind of interesting. Like, the Tag Team Division made a revival, but it would seem to me that they have also lost out on the most time with the women getting more segments. And I'm not sure if there's any study or not, but I do... Not that the Tag Team Division was getting a whole lot of love, but they at least kind of had four teams kind of bouncing around. I mean, it was kind of crazy, although I'm looking forward to the match, with AOP just kind of won the titles out of the blue, honestly, against Seth Rollins. Oh, and well, how did I forget about getting to that one? But we'll just close up the tag team thing here first. AOP versus The Bar should be a fun match.
Yeah, that one should be fun. I mean, the team elimination match, that's going to be on the kickoff.
It's going to be terrible.
I don't plan on being in front of the TV by then. Maybe I'll catch the end of it.
Right.
And hopefully the New Day and the Usos do not get eliminated. That would be ridiculous. That should be an easy win for SmackDown if we're doing it as a best of seven. Then you got AOP and the Bar. Big test for AOP. Certainly, I mean, the Bar, Sheamus and Cesaro are an excellent team. They've been an excellent team now for about 2 years. Surprisingly longevity for Sheamus and Cesaro for a team that was put together as two enemies who were being forced to team up. And meanwhile, they are still a team. After all this time, but again, they've only gotten better in that time. AOP showed some signs of being a good team in NXT, but I think they had matches in NXT that were certainly, you know, laid out very well for them. I think that, you know, a lot of time was spent on those AOP matches, the better ones in the tag team championships. They did a lot. They did a lot of three ways and things of that nature. Gimmicks.
Well, and I was just thinking too that they kind of did their, because it was Gargano and Ciampa that they had some of their best matches, wasn't it? And
yes,
was it? Who was the third team that was kind of involved sometimes and sometimes not? Was it
Sanity?
Oh yeah, Sanity was their first challenge. Yeah,
Sanity. Struggling to remember some of these NXT teams.
But I guess the one thing that I was thinking, though, is that it's going to be a different type match. Just because those Cesaro and Sheamus are probably a little bit smaller than AOP, they are certainly more their size. It's going to be a different type of match
than they had
against Ciampa and Gargano even Sanity, who has one beast and one small guy, usually.
Yeah. Yeah, no. It'll be an interesting match. I expect that, you know, I expect it'll be good. I don't think AOP have ever been actively bad in the ring. Again, as I said, I mean, they definitely need a lot of work, but you know you're on the main roster. They have not been tested on the main roster. They've had pretty much nothing but short matches. They went through a period where they weren't being used. And had strangely competitive matches with Heath Slater and Rhino that never should have been. They won the tag titles in a handicap match, beating one guy. So yeah, no, this is definitely the first, you know, test for them. Although, say the Raw Tag Team Division, I don't know where you go next with them. You really have to put together either bring teams up from NXT, or you gotta, you know, put two singles wrestlers together and hope they really gel well and not screw it up like they did with Roode and Gable.
Yeah, which, even if they didn't screw up Roode and Gable, just physically, like, that's a tough one to sell for me. Because, you know, Roode's in good shape, but he's not really a big guy, and they just have done zero favors for Chad Gable, despite what I believe to be more than above board professional wrestling and even pretty solid promos.
No, I was about to say, was Gable and Jordan the other team with them? But no, Gable and Jordan came up before AOP really started getting. So no, it wasn't.
Yeah. It was not American Alpha. Yeah, I feel like there might be someone that we're missing, but for sure, because it might have been the Revival before they got the call.
It was the Revival, that's right.
But again, then, like, even though Dash and Dawson had kind of the no-frills offense, you know, they're not the power type team that Sheamus and Cesaro are.
Yeah, no. This will be very much power against power. Although, you know, Cesaro and Sheamus are big strong dudes, but you know, they'll have trouble doing some of their double teams and some of their offense against AOP, and then AOP might have a little more trouble doing that, some of their offense with Cesaro. So once again, this is the type of match that could probably they could go either way.
Yeah.
As far as match quality is concerned. And then as far as who's gonna win, I wouldn't have AOP lose this soon. But at the same time, SmackDown's got to keep this competitive, at least had, you know, just like last year. They're treating it as a best of seven. It's got to be 3-3 going into the last match of the show. I'm just trying to think where SmackDown picks up its wins along the way.
Well, and I guess that's the interesting thing, and this is a win that to me. It could go either way, but I mean, if we're given like both of the tag team matches to SmackDown, and would we say the women's match goes to Raw then?
I think the women's tag.
I guess I was thinking about the women's singles match with Rousey and
I
Charlotte.
We'll go to Raw, but that also might go on last, so that might be more the.
Oh.
Well, either that or Bryan and Lesnar will go on last. I think. I don't think the men's Survivor Series match doesn't have the same cachet as last year. Because last year they had a ridiculous mix of talent in that match, and this year it's just basically, you know, the rank and file of Raw and SmackDown in that match. Other than Shane, I guess if you count him.
Yeah, it's the names that they don't have spots for anywhere else. Is pretty much what's happening with with those teams. I guess that does make us have to figure out who the main event is. But I'd be pretty shocked. Anytime Brock Lesnar's involved, I just assume he's the main event. So I would think that would be the deciding bout. And wow, we got really kind of sort of sidetracked from, because I guess I was thinking about the Seth Rollins versus Shinsuke Nakamura match, which honestly, there's far more interest in Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose from this perspective.
Saying that, you know, Rollins is pretty much going into this match, you know, figuratively distracted. In the end of the match, he might be literally distracted if Ambrose actually shows up. So yeah, I'm thinking that match, hopefully they'll have a chance to have a really good match, but I'm thinking Nakamura takes that one, because there's really no reason for him not to.
And I guess that's why there are all the reasons in the world to let Shinsuke win that one.
He needs something. They got nothing for him at this point.
And it's so bad, too, because every time that he's on TV, he cracks my shit up. And this one was no different. Him talking about poor Seth Rollins, and how he was going to solve his problems by giving him a knee to the face. He continues to crack me up when he does get a chance. Heel Shinsuke is one of those things that... I guess if he did that in New Japan, I was not familiar with it. It still continues to crack my shit up, 100%. I guess, again, like, if the tag team match goes to SmackDown, the Nakamura wins, and the Bar wins, that's their three wins for the night. Because, yeah, Daniel Bryan isn't winning. Yeah, and it's kind of funny, the, especially, I guess that's the other implication with Charlotte taking on Ronda, is that the women's match, the women's team match had a little more spark to it if Charlotte was going to be involved. It has a lot less spark to it without Charlotte involved.
Yeah, that does. Yeah, that match could be something of a train wreck. I think hopefully it's good. Hopefully it's not ridiculously long. Once again, without Charlotte there, there's definitely a void. Interesting that they're not immediately naming the fifth member, but then again, we've been disappointed with those things before, so it'll probably just be Mandy Rose. And then the match itself, we've just discussed Nia Jax. Tamina's not a great worker. It makes no sense for Natalya to be on the same team with four heels, let alone Ruby Riott. I don't understand. At that point, she's already got four heels on her team. Why didn't Alexa Bliss just put Alicia Fox in that spot instead of Natalya? She had no intention of letting Bayley and Sasha finish their match. So why is Natalya on this team?
Yeah, that was a pretty bizarre choice, especially like if they had Bayley or Sasha on the team, it's like, okay, three heels, two babies, you can kind of talk yourself into the best women available. But with it being 4-1, it's just kind of like, why? That brawl kind of distracted from what will be a kind of an uninteresting match in and of itself. Yeah, because like the Survivor Series matches themselves are not of much interest to me. Survivor really Series. Not. I mean,
the men's one, to keep the show going, because we're already at over an hour, it's got a little bit more interest because at least someone on that team has something tangible to gain from winning, that being Braun Strowman, because Team Raw has to win in order for him to get all of his promises from Stephanie, as far as his future championship rematch with Brock Lesnar, and a match at, I assume, a stipulation match with Baron Corbin at TLC. They also did mention that Raw has won the men's elimination match 2 years in a row, so that puts a little some doubt on it as well. I mean, Daniel Bryan not being in that match and AJ Styles also not taking anyone's place, that makes it less interesting.
Agreed.
Shane McMahon being in the match is pretty cringeworthy. I get the story they try to tell going back to Crown Jewel, but AJ Styles is sitting this one out. Randy Orton is sitting this one out. And Shane McMahon's going to be in the fucking ring.
Yeah, which yet again brings me back to my question. How is it that Jeff Hardy and Rey Mysterio, two veterans, two guys that should be treated like legends, somehow are wrestling in garbage matches like this?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
Come on, like Randy Orton, I am sure is getting well compensated. I can't imagine Jeff Hardy and or Rey Mysterio making, if they're making more money than Randy Orton, it can't be by that wide of a margin.
I highly doubt it. I never remember what Randy Orton makes, but yeah, no. It's a weird situation.
I don't get it.
I mean, Jeff Hardy is definitely very, very slowed down. Ray, if they keep, you know, working him like a dog, his old injuries are going to catch up with him as well. I don't want to say that because the real problem is Shane in the fucking match. I mean, we're talking about Jeff Hardy and Rey Mysterio. The real problem is Shane.
I mean, it's kind of funny. It's one of those things to me.
If Corbin's not going to wrestle, why does Shane need to wrestle? I mean, he did.
Well, you know.
Unless there's a plan. Unless there's some kind of a plan.
I always like Shane always seems to end up kind of pulling some entertainment out of his matches. Now, I did not see
I feel like those days are over. I really do. I mean, Shane will try to do some crazy stuff, but it's like after doing two cell jumps, it's like, what else can he show us, man?
Well, I mean, he still did not need to cell jump against AJ Styles.
But the second cell jump was after the Styles match.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's just like...
I guess that... It wasn't that long ago, though, that he didn't that he had a match that was good. And, well, A, he's going to be sheltered... Oh, and maybe this was the point that I was getting to, too, though, is that no matter what, I guess even with a match like the one with AJ Styles, I never expect him to win. You know, right. It's one of those things where he's at that age where I'm like, no, he really shouldn't be beating any in-ring competitor. Like, unless it's in some type of a situation that you can put in some extenuating circumstances, like a Hell in a Cell, in which he can somehow equalize things. Like, there's no way, as good a shape as all of the McMahons seem to be in, there's still an unbelievability factor to them winning matches.
And I don't imagine Shane will be a major factor in a SmackDown win if there is one. I'm not betting on there being one. And
oh, right.
I get what I'm saying this, but hopefully for Dolph Ziggler's sake, he does get to pin Shane McMahon to erase that from his, or at least cancel out that from his record.
Yeah, that would be nice for him to get. Something to me that is far more interesting than either of those matches, and we've mentioned his name, the Dean Ambrose promo on Monday, I think, is definitely something that is in the category of worth talking about. And that was another one where... I really liked it. I liked the promo. I like when they give people a unique setting to deliver their promo. Who came up with the idea of Dean Ambrose deciding to chill on a car beside a weird bonfire that was creepily close to said car? I don't know, but, they're kind of felt like a good authenticity for the Dean Ambrose character with that setting.
Yeah, no, I liked it too. I like the setting. I like the verbiage. I like the, you know, explanation as it was of, you know, the Shield made him weak and he needs to, you know, burn or destroy that part of him that made him weak, and, you know, destroying the flak jacket. Is it flak jacket or flak jacket?
I always thought it was FLAK, flak jacket.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. It was really well done. It continued the story. Once again, as I said, going into Sunday, Seth Rollins very rattled. He's not himself. We're doing a slower build toward, you know, this Survivor Series having the Raw versus SmackDown theme is allowing this story to breathe with Ambrose and Rollins before we get to a major match between the two of them. So, and even after, you know, Survivor Series, there's still 4 weeks between until TLC. So once again, they can keep pouring gasoline on the fire, so to speak.
right.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Hopefully, they aren't using gasoline for the next 4 weeks. That would, I feel, be a little unnecessary after its use this week. I guess it's one of those things where I like Sirius Ambrose, and you know, if he has to be heel for that to happen, I guess I'm all for it. You know, and it's still awkward to me that they keep on throwing it to Renee Young for special insight.
Oh, that is so bad. It's gotten really bad.
And
they've got to figure that out.
I really did think that it was pretty clear that in some ways it was, to me, it made sense. Like Dean Ambrose was saying that, you know, having to cover their backs and kind of, you know, having himself rely on them to be there made him weak. And that he kind of needs to be on his own to be the strongest that he can be. And I'm not quite sure why Renee Young couldn't kind of voice that opinion in that moment. Especially since, again, like, the last couple of weeks, they've specifically gone out of their way to kind of say, Renee, with your special insight on Dean Ambrose, what can you say? And it's been just nothing. Like, they've decided to stop ignoring the fact that they're married, but they've only made it worse, which I didn't know was possible.
Yeah, yeah. They've created a whole new problem. They've done this with Triple H and Stephanie before, that, you know, they're having issues and they haven't talked to each other for a week or whatever, but that's just 1 week. You could believe that, you know, for a week they slept away from each other, they didn't see each other, one was on a business trip or what have you.
Oh, right.
We're 3-4 weeks into this whole Ambrose Rollins thing now, that it's going on a month now.
Right. Yeah, and a husband and a husband and wife combo haven't really talked at all in a month's time frame.
Has he changed at home? Is he being mean at home? Has this affected their relationship? You know, it's created all these questions that they don't want to answer.
Yeah, and like I said, like, I feel like there are definitely enough angles to make it believable that he's different at home, but they still get along, and they haven't voiced any of them. So yeah, it's been really weird. That whole situation just remains one of the weirdest things about WWE programming. Even after what I might call a great week of programming, that was something that stuck out as not so great. I guess, is there anything else to talk about before hitting the old dusty trail?
Not at all.
Okie dokie. Well, I do know that personally I need to do some catching upping on NXT. I think it's only 2 weeks worth, but I do need to catch up on that prior to, I believe, War Games is this weekend, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it is. It's Saturday.
So I'll try to give that a watchies. And Survivor Series, I will catch what I catch. And we'll see what happens. Tonight's Bell Time Beer, Stunt Granny Brewing, Double Team. Very happy to report that I suppose I need to figure out a wrestling-related name for the eggnog milk stout that is currently... Well, it may be done bubbling downstairs in the basement already. There has already been definitely some fermentation happening downstairs, which I'm very, very happy about. So, we shall see how that one turns out, and any wrestling-related names that Eggnog Milk Stout might... might come through your brain, Stunt Granny fans. Go ahead and shoot us at either at Stunt Granny on the Stunt Granny Facebook page, at DeFrango11. You can even send it to at Chris Calamita, even if you didn't have anything to do with the brewing. You can also rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to us. And yeah, have a good night.